You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm not Phil Williams, as you may have guessed. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in for Phil. And it is now that time of the week that I know all of the listeners listen forward to. It's time for Grand Council.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Is the Grand Council present and accounted for?
Yes, sir. Dale Jackson present. What?
Dale Jackson checking in. Who else we got?
And Jeff Poor checking in.
Jeff Poor. All right, now two of my favorite conservative commentators here, also occasionally my sparring partners. Guys, are y'all ready to get this thing going? I'm the rookie here, so hey, Dale, why don't you get us started with the first question?
Sure. I think we're seeing the Space Command situation is getting worse and worse.
Yep.
Tommy Tuberville continues to pound away on anybody he gets in front of him to say, hey, where's this decision? Where's this decision? I think it's pretty clear that it's not coming to Alabama. It's going to be ugly. And I think our political elite and our betters are going to blame Tommy Tuberville for being so adamant about this. Am I wrong?
Ooh. Jeff?
I don't think so. The political elite are beholden to Tommy Tuberville. They're not going to pick a fight with him. Especially the farmers. I mean, he is the alpha. By the way, my two-year-old is screaming at me. We're driving through Birmingham to go see Tucker tomorrow. But anyway, I just don't think that they're going to do that to Tuberville. Here's what I think they'll do, Dale. I can see them trying to stall this decision until Biden's out of office and hope that he loses next year in 24, and then just give it to Alabama.
Interesting take. I'm just having trouble getting over the irony that Biden, I shouldn't have any trouble getting over it. We see it all the time. But the irony that Biden is blaming all of the decisions on politics, he is doing exactly what liberals accused Donald Trump of doing with the site selection. We all know at this point, we've seen the reports. Huntsville was simply the best choice by the criteria put forth by this committee. We saw it in every judging or every factor that they judged. And yet Trump was accused of playing politics and giving it to Alabama because Alabama voted for Trump. And literally, that is what Biden is doing right now. Now, to Dale's question, will the political elites blame Tommy Tuberville? It's entirely possible. I could see that happening. They will try to blame somebody, but I think Jeff might have the ticket on this. I could see this. The best thing for Alabama would probably be to try to stall it out until Biden's out of office. But who they will blame? They'll scapegoat somebody. They always do. Dale, let's go back to you. What are your thoughts?
Oh, okay. I think they will blame him. Mo Brooks isn't there to kick around anymore. So now it becomes who's the next most outspoken person. It's Tommy Tuberville. He's gotten in fights over abortion. He's getting in fights over this. He's gotten in fights over immigration. He's buddied up with Joe Manchin. All these things. And that Joe Manchin thing's probably a good thing. Yeah. They'll see that as a good one. He's working with a Democrat. But Tuberville is much louder than anyone else in the delegation, and this has been one of his issues. I think he's right for doing everything he's doing. I just think that they'll look for a scapegoat, and I don't think they really like Tommy Tuberville. Jeff's right. He's their guy, I guess the farmers and stuff like that. But I think the newspapers and some of our other elites aren't too happy that we have a football coach as our senator, and they will say that his failure to be diplomatic might have led to
his lack of leadership. So, Dale, I've got a follow-up to that, and I think you may have just answered it, at least in part, when you mentioned the newspapers. Specifically, what elites do you see that would that that would go after.
Oh, I'm talking about the media. I mean, I use elites disparagingly. I don't mean they're actually elites. Come on, you're a newspaper guy. They don't make any money. They don't have any power.
No,
what's going on?
It's the lowest level of elitism possible. Right. Jeff, let's go to you. What's your question?
Well, I'm gonna open this can of worms. Bill and I got into it a little this morning on his radio show, so I'm eager to hear what you think, Scott. But this idea that we're going to ban minors at anything drag related, I think it's a bit of an overreach from the nanny state government. It's like a Republican supermajority is trying to play the role of nanny state. What do you think of that? What do you think about this effort from the state senate? There's a handful of senators. Two things I think are good they want to do. They want to ban drag shows in public libraries and in public schools. And then they want to ban minors from any other drag shows. Is that an overreach?
Can I go first, Dale? You okay with that?
Sure, your show, man.
The first thing I would say is, you know, we're kind of notorious in Alabama for solving problems that don't exist. We've kind of done that for 150 years now as a state. I think this probably falls into that category. I don't know that we've got a real problem with kids going to drag shows in Alabama. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Lord knows, all three of us cover enough news to know anything is possible and anything could happen at any minute. I would have more of a comfort level if they were simply treating them in their relationship to children, if they were treating them the same way they would Sammy's strip club, you know, anywhere that kids aren't allowed now. If it's a sexualized show, kids shouldn't be allowed then. At the same time, I don't want to be a nanny state. I don't want to sit here and preach freedom and then try to deny people freedom just because they don't agree with me or because they see things a different way. Dale?
They started the fight. They can lose the fight. That's my take. I mean, that's just the way it is. Look, I didn't ask them to start roping in kids and reading to them and doing all this other stuff. That's going to get a reaction. The laws were not set perfect in 1932, 1885, or 1779. We are allowed to change, tweak, and correct things that need to. And as they come up, this has come up. They pick the fight. They can lose the fight.
Jeff, valid point. They did start this crap.
Well, I started it, but I don't really care about that. I just don't tell me how to raise my kid, okay? I don't take your kid to a drag show, number one. That's my advice. But I don't need the idiots in the Alabama legislature telling me how to raise my kid. You know, I mean, I do a bad enough job, I guess. I don't need them doing that.
I'm honestly thinking that may be a strong point right there. I don't really want anybody in Montgomery telling me how to live my life or raise my kid. I don't know, guys. I think that I lean toward staying out of it a little bit unless we really see a problem. But I also agree with Dale. They started this crap. We're going to give it back to them. All right, here's the question I've got for you two, and this will take us into our first break probably. Does the Price Act get a vote on the floor of the House or the Senate in this session? Jeff?
I think I can see it in the Senate, can't see it in the House. I think this could get through a Wars Committee where it got punted to by Donnie Chastain, and I can see the Price Act get through the Senate. But it'll get voted on with the assumption that it's DOA in the House, and it'll probably pass, and then that's where it'll die.
Okay. Dale, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will get a vote. I mean, the real story is, you know, the AEA flexing their muscle yet again. They've donated a bunch of money to Republicans. And in the House, it's been effective at spiking this. And that's a real problem. There were polls yesterday out that said African-Americans, 78% support school vouchers and things like the
wow.
Price Act.
That's up.
And even in Illinois, like 79% of people there support it. So liberal states support it. Alabamians support it. But the teachers union doesn't support it. So Alabama Republicans are going to lay down for them.
Very interesting. I am also hearing from legislators that they are getting more pressure from superintendents than they are AA. And they're getting a lot of pressure from AA.
But you know what? I hear that. That's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Same justification
exact,
for sure.
Exact same thing with the exact same constituency. And yeah, same thing.
Okay. Guys, I'll answer that question very quickly. I think that the House does have a shot at getting it to a vote simply because the numbers are a little better there. Still got a task to go through the second committee and get there. I think there are too many people on the House side to get it to the floor for a vote, but I think the Senate might. Guys, we're going to take our first break. If you'll stay with us, we'll come back. I'm going to go ahead and warn you both. We may be looking at an extended session of the Grand Council today. So get yourselves comfortable. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in today for Phil Williams. We are in the middle of Grand Council. I'm joined by Dell Jackson and Jeff Poor, the two regular members of the Grand Council. Guys, let's get another round started. Dell, let's start with you.
All right. The monument at I-65, that Saturn rocket out there, is something that a lot of people want to save, whether it is restore that one, replace it, whatever. There was a bill put forth by Tom Butler to do just that. A bunch of Democrats and Republicans signed on board, I think 27 of 35. And now a lot of people are boo-hooing and complaining and saying, wait, hold on. This is changing. This is changing the monuments law. And now it's going to make it harder to tear down historical markers and whatnot. Uh-oh. And now there's a little bit of drama there. Will this get changed before the final vote on this and they'll save the rocket but not change the memorial law? Or was it a Trojan horse, which they can't tear down either?
Jeff, you want to go first on this?
Yeah, you know, that secret racist Tom Butler trying to sneak one past the goal line here. I mean, come on, who's really saying that? Is this like an AL.com thing?
Yes, that's exactly right.
That's what it is.
Go back to New Jersey, wherever you're from, whoever's saying that. it's so stupid. Whatever it takes to get the rocket done and for this to go away, I'm for. So change the law, whatever you need to do.
All right, Jeff, does that mean you're in favor of keeping the rocket, replacing the rocket, repairing the rocket, whatever it takes to have the rocket?
Whatever it takes, as long as Dale quits asking this question every week.
Jeff wants to put a drag show there instead so he can take his kid there when he's driving in.
Jeff would never take his kid to the drag show. I'm going to defend Jeff. He would never take his kid to the drag show. He just doesn't want to deny other people the right to take their kids if they want to. I think the rocket is important to the state of Alabama. I think it is one of those road sign symbols that shows us that we're not necessarily the state that people like to stereotype us as. I'm for whatever it takes to preserve, either repair or replace the rocket. And you know, at this point, I would like to go off on, I can't remember his first name, Centel, whoever's over Alabama Tourism.
Lee Centel.
Yeah, who, you know, gets rave reviews, and I, to this day, do not understand it. Tourism in Alabama has grown in spite of him, not because of him. And he is one of the people that is least representative of the voters of this state, which is why he doesn't care about the rocket.
I guess maybe that is the case, but I'll tell you this, people care very much. And I think even if they do have to sneak that in and it becomes something where it makes it harder to tear down other monuments, I think that'll pass too. But I'm guessing they'll change it.
Yeah, I hope the rocket remains. And that's what I'm pushing for. Let's say, Jeff, it's your turn. What's your question?
Anybody else think it's a horrible idea for the state to lease a new state house from the RSA besides me?
I think it's an awful idea. I think it's an awful idea. Look, I think Jeff said it best this morning. I'll agree with one thing Jeff said this morning. he did say that going out and leasing this makes no sense. It's a function of government. So, yeah, spend the money, buy the land, build the damn thing, and run it. And I think people will be fine with that. But renting it from RSA, so once again, they can hook up their buddies, that's a bad idea.
I think it was Jeff, is it my turn? You okay with
it? You're the host.
You're up.
I'm jumping. I'm going to jump in here. I think it was Paul DeMarco that tweeted this morning, is there another state that does not own their own state house? And I don't know the circumstances in every state. I do not understand this obsession with our legislature wanting to lease everything and own nothing. Remember, they tried to do this with the prisons. They tried their best to just, you know, do a lease deal and let somebody else own it and run it while the federal courts are pointing both barrels of a double barrel shotgun at us. And here we go again, giving RSA control and money, and it makes no sense. You've actually got a pretty sizable faction of the state that would love to see the director of RSA step down and go away. But we seem to have a legislature that is bound and determined to strengthen his hand at every move. This makes no sense whatsoever to me. As I think as Jeff just said, or Dale said, this is a state function. This is a state property. This should be a state building, and we should not be going through RSA to do it. It's funny, they always find the money to do whatever they want, and then they love to, well, it's, you know, a better financial deal, we don't have the budget, yada yada yada. We end up with the state, the citizens end up with zero assets out of this building that we will pay tens of millions of dollars for.
Let me just add this, Scott. They've increased the price of that Elmore County prison from $636 million, almost $1 billion,
right,
and just a vote of a unelected committee. And you're telling me you can't spring for a state house, but you could just, by the snap of a finger, like, increase the price of the Elmore County prison? It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Alternate idea here, guys. Why don't we combine the two, put the prison and the state house together so they can just serve their time in both places?
Oh, he went there. He actually went there, and I don't disagree. I think that was probably a pretty good suggestion. But I would rather see the state own the assets than the state not own the assets. Guys, we're coming up on a break. Can you guys hold over for me for another segment? I texted both of you. Nobody responded, so either you're not reading your text or that was a very polite no.
As long as it's quick.
We'll make it quick.
No, I guess if Jeff will stay, I'll stay. Okay.
Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. Y'all stay with me. Well, we got Boomer's telling me we got a couple of more minutes. So I'm going to give you my question now and let you be thinking about how you want to answer it. I want to know who pulled the ESG bill today. We'll be right back after this break. You guys stay with us. More Grand Council from Right Side Radio. This is Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in for Phil Williams. We are in the middle of Grand Council. First of all, let me thank Dale Jackson and Jeff Poore for agreeing to stay on for one more segment so we could go to another question and cover a little more ground here. I gave them the question before we went to break. Who pulled the ESG bill from committee? And I'm asking them to name names. Jeff, who did it?
Well, I think it's Ted Roberts, but he's a good guy here. Now, he says this will be back next week. He thinks the committee and go to the floor. But he is trying to be strategic here, and he has his reasons. I take him at his word. He pulled it. But I just like I said, be careful before coming after him. But dude, he's got a lot of people coming for him.
I'm hearing he didn't pull it, Jeff. I might not be getting great information, but that's what I'm being told, that he didn't pull it.
Well, I mean, but they insist more than just one that this is going to come back next week. You know, there's enough, and you look at who's co-sponsoring that bill. I mean, he has some heavy hitters on that bill.
You do.
This isn't going to go away quietly.
No. Dale?
Well, from what I've read, it's three letters, BCA. They're not too happy about it.
Right.
But, I mean, that's not a person, but it's more of an entity. They're powerful. They're just like the other, the second powerful, maybe first powerful now, next to the AEA. So, yeah, if they decide if they want to be able to invest in companies that require ESG and all this other nonsense, I guess the BCA doesn't want to step in there and create an unfriendly business environment. And, you know, if Jeff wants to take his kids to drag queens and businesses in Alabama want to invest in woke companies, so be it. Who am I to step in the way of freedom?
Dale wants an authoritarian Alabama where big government just solves our problem. We send our kids to school year-round and turn them into little robots so Dale doesn't have to hire a babysitter this summer.
They're all going to be AI anyway.
Okay, I had Paul DeMarco on earlier, and I asked Paul, other than the bill sponsor, who has the authority or the ability to pull a bill out of committee? And without hesitation, he said, the chairman.
Yeah.
So I'm being told that Dan didn't pull it. I don't know. I agree with Jeff on this. Dan Roberts is one of the most conservative, consistent legislators that we have in Montgomery. His district actually reaches into Trustful a little bit, so we kind of keep an eye on what he's doing. That's a guy I'm pretty proud of and pretty proud of the way he's handled things. So I don't know who the committee chair is there. If I did, I would call the name, but I hadn't looked it up, and I don't know who it is. And if Dan's pulling it because he's got a reason, I think Dan has earned the trust of conservatives. If BCA has gotten a chairman to pull it, which I think is exactly what happened with the Price Act in the Senate education policy meeting, I think that was a Donnie Chastain deal in and of itself. I don't think he had any co-conspirators. I think he just is a flunky and a puppet
for those
people. What do you mean?
They're just putting it to another committee that makes
more
sense. That's all.
The committee that Stutz requested to begin with, and they said, oh, no, you don't need to go to that committee. That would mess up our stall tactic that we've got planned. But I don't know who's pulling the strings. I don't know who the puppeteer is, but I'm ready to start pulling the curtain back on these people, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit much here. Again, we have a conservative legislature that can't do anything conservative.
Right.
And you know, a lot of people are getting a little frustrated with it. I think maybe some of the stuff is overwrought. But, look, I mean, we've talked about all the stuff about school choice before 1,000 times. There's the Parental Rights Act. There's all these other things, the ESG stuff. There are bills that conservative culture warriors are ready to fight on. I mean, there's a culture war going on.
Right.
Okay? And Alabama has the troops on the battlefield, and they're all just standing around going, what should we do? Should we do nothing? Okay, fine. And that, I think, is going to irritate your base.
Jeff, why do we have a supposedly conservative legislature, a strong conservative majority among voters in Alabama, And why do they keep bungling one conservative issue after another? Do they love the power more than they love the people?
We don't. I mean, people will say that we don't really have a conservative legislature. I think they think of themselves as conservative, and they probably are. What we have is this sort of oligarchy that runs the leadership in these mm-hmm. two chambers, and they're the ones calling the shots. And what's incredible, I mean, you can say what you want about Nathaniel Ledbetter and Greg Reed and not being conservative enough. Well, they're racking up some points here. They got some vote totals in their two chambers that the North Korean government would be proud of. I mean, you know, 100-5 and 35-0. They got the guys marching in lockstep, even the Democrats. So I think it's leadership, and I think there's like two or three people pulling the string, and they got the word out on the street. If you cross us, we're going to make your life a living hell for the next 3 years, 3.5 years as a member of the legislature. You don't want to be the next Andrew Sorrell or whoever. So there is a chilling effect here underway.
Yeah, you don't want to be on the wrong side of the whiteboard in Governor Ivey's office, right? You don't want your name in the wrong column.
You're not going to get your overpass or your state park money or your veterans money or whatever. We're going to kill your bill the minute after you file it. People, they know this. And there's a lot of new vendors that are just terrified to speak out.
Where does it end, Dale? I mean, how and where does this end?
When there are consequences. And as of now, there's not really been any.
No.
I mean, can you think of contested primaries where you lose anybody that is not being punished by leadership? I can't in the recent past.
Mm-mm. And we talked earlier on the show. Go ahead, Jeff.
What, you had 20%? You had 20% turnout in some of these Republican primaries?
Right.
You had Tom Watley's race in Auburn. He loses a contested primary by one vote. I mean, you have a very apathetic, complacent electorate that, and it affords the opportunity for the state's ruling elite to get away with what they get away with because people just don't care.
Governor Ivey comes in and pushes through, by hook or by crook, one of the largest tax hikes in Alabama history, and she walks away with one of the highest approval ratings of any governor in our lifetime. Was Mo Brooks right when he said the voters need to quit being stupid in Alabama?
I mean, he's everywhere, not just Alabama, pretty much everywhere. But yeah, there's some truth to that. There is some. There aren't really consequences for not doing. I mean, you talk the right talk during the election, and you make it through your primary. The other side wants to do something dumb, so you're going to get elected. And then if you don't act on it, well, sorry, you've got the money to run your next election. You're good to go.
Yep, that's it. Jeff, we're not.
The voters of Alabama. Real quick, the voters of Alabama are like an abused spouse. I mean, they Bentley, million-dollar Bob Riley, Singleman. You look at the governors we've had, and Riley's probably the more decent one, but the bar is so low that's why Ivy has all this political capital. Now, what she does with it remains to be seen, but she's got a long leash because we've had a bad run of governors the last 30 years.
We have, and I'll tell you, I'm not happy with the voters. I think they've got to quit treating state elections like the homecoming queen election or the SGA president election, where it's just a popularity contest. Stephanie Smith made the point earlier. We have too many voters that think they have done their job when they go to the polls and they vote conservative. Then they sit back and pay no attention to what these people that they voted for actually do when they get to Montgomery. We're not going to have another 2010 where the Democrats sweep in and take control. We know that. The numbers aren't there. That's never going to happen in this state in our lifetime. But I think we're headed to a civil war within the Republican Party in Alabama. Anybody thoughts on that?
Yeah, but one side has all the guns. I mean, there's just it's just pretty clear that there is – I mean, even the establishment's conservative, but maybe they don't vote that way, but they're still going to have. And when I say guns, I mean money.
You're talking about the AEAs and the BCAs that are dumping money and controlling these people. Yeah.
Well, real quick, before we have to go here, and Bill Brooks is out there listening, and probably is. I bet you're on the Alabama Republican Party Executive Committee. It's time for these guys to put some teeth into this prohibition against AEA giving the Republicans
Amen.
And stop this nonsense. nonsense. Amen. And you get these older members that were there when he, when Paul Harbor was the shadow governor, to remind them how terrible it was when the AEA ran this state. That's, you've got to get the Republican Party to start enforcing that rule and put some enforcement mechanism in that rule and knock some of this nonsense off. And I think that will start solving the problem.
Guys, we're going to leave it right there. First of all, thank both of you for coming on. Two of the best in the business in conservative talk radio. I appreciate you coming in and helping me get across the finish line here, because I don't do this every day. Thank you both. We appreciate you, the Grand Council. We're going to take a quick break here, folks. We will be back with more Right Side Radio. You stay with us. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. That was me daydreaming while Boomer was trying to get my attention. This is Scott Buttram sitting in for Phil Williams, and we are in the final countdown. In fact, Boomer's been playing a lot of Boston instrumentals in the background. He should have come with Final Countdown right there. That was, we just missed an opportunity there, Boomer, for some Boomer music for my Boomer self. I always enjoy that. So let's, like, as we go into the final 8 minutes of the show. First of all, I want to thank Phil for letting me sit in. I really enjoy doing this and love to do it at every opportunity. I want to thank you, the audience, for tolerating somebody that doesn't really know what they're doing but loves to talk about conservative issues. I think it is important for families in our state. I think conservative issues are really the best growth issues for our society that take us in the best path. I mean, this is not something that is a shtick for me. It's something that I really believe in and spent a lifetime reaching this point. I appreciate the opportunity to spend the afternoon talking to an audience that shares that view. And I enjoy hearing from people that don't share that view. I don't mind if you don't agree with my position or if you don't agree with conservatism. I'm happy to have that conversation, and I try to never back away from a conversation like that. One or two things are going to happen when I talk to people that I don't necessarily agree with on an ideological basis, and that is I'm going to learn something that I didn't know, or I'm going to strengthen my position in opposition to those things. So that's the only two things that can come from a conversation, and that's why I'm willing to have them. I urge you to do the same. If you believe in what you believe in, don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't be afraid to talk about it with people who don't share that opinion, because there are still people in the world that will listen to logic, will listen to reason, and will come around sometimes. You know, so everybody is not backed so far into their corner that they can never come out. I know it feels that way sometimes, and I know it looks that way when you look at Montgomery and when you look at Washington, that people are just immovable objects, and a lot are. But there are still a lot of people in the middle that are figuring out what is best for them, for their family, and for their country and their state. So I urge conservatives to go out and have those conversations. Don't back away from them, and don't be scared of them. A couple of things that I hope you will continue to watch as this legislative session is now on the backside. It's on the backstretch. We are through the halfway mark. Just started the second half of this legislative session. There have been some good things done, as several of our guests have pointed out. The fentanyl bill, strengthening the penalties on that, that is killing families in Alabama. It is killing our young people. The opioid epidemic is real. At this point, if it hasn't affected your family, I would almost bet my bottom dollar that it has affected a family that you love, that you care about, that you're close to. It is hitting so often and so hard that it's hard to find anyone today who has not been affected by the tragedies that are associated with the opioid epidemic. So passing the bill to hammer people in possession of and trying to sell fentanyl, that was a powerful bill. Give the legislature credit for that. That was something that needed to pass. We also need to pass the bill strengthening laws against gang activity that will allow Attorney General Steve Marshall to go after some of these people, not just the ones who sometimes commit the crime, but the people who put them up to it, the people who are involved in it, and to bring them down and start shutting this down and making some of our inner city streets a little safer again. I mean, we live in Trustville. We're right outside Birmingham. Our city limits go right up to Birmingham, and it has reached a point where there are parts of that city that I won't let my family drive through. I won't let them go into certain times of the day and after dark. And we still enjoy so many restaurants and venues in Birmingham. But we now stop and think before we go over there because of the increasing violence. For those of you who may not know, Birmingham set a 20-year high in homicides last year. I was looking at the numbers on Monday of this week, and they are on pace to set another record in homicides. This is not what we want in our cities. This is not what we want in society. And for those of us who believe in the Second Amendment, I think it strengthens the reason we believe in it, the reason we think we have a constitutional right. We don't think, we know we have a constitutional right to carry and bear arms and to protect ourselves and our families. And this out-of-control violence in so many Democratic-controlled areas of our state, any tool we can give the Attorney General to prosecute and bring these people to justice, I think we need to do that. That bill's still out there, so keep an eye on it. I feel good about it passing. You heard some great information from Dale Jackson and from Jeff Poor, two friends and two guys that I appreciate very much. I mentioned that they are two of the best conservative talk show hosts in the state. I mean that. I think the world of both of them. We don't, as you see, we don't always agree on issues. If any of you follow Dale and myself on Twitter, you've seen Dale and I butt heads and go after stuff. Jeff and I sometimes disagree. We tend to agree a little more often, but even as conservatives, we can have these conversations. We can have these arguments. We can have these debates, and we can do it in a way that we walk away and we're still friends and we're still respectful of each other. And I think hearing each other's opinions strengthens our own. Okay. So really appreciate those guys coming on. Just so you know, they were scheduled for 1 30-minute segment. They both agreed to hang on for another 15 minutes just to help carry their inexperienced buddy over the finish line. So I appreciate that. But we're coming to an end here. Also, keep an eye on the Price Act. We don't know what's going to happen with that. You heard Jeff say he thinks it's been sent to another committee on the Senate side, but he thinks it has a chance of getting to a vote on the floor. I agree with that. I think the House is going to be far more difficult. You heard Stephanie Smith tell us Education Policy Committee heard it today, and they decided to punt for another week and talk about it again next week. That's another classic stalling tactic that you see quite often in Montgomery. Also, so many people in the House, it could be like herding cats. I don't think it'll get to a vote there. I don't think it's going to pass. I think it'll pass the Senate, but what is important right now is finding out where elected officials stand on school choice. Because if they're not supporting it and they claim to be conservative, we've got 3 years to work on their replacement. And we can find a replacement, but we've got to go to work on it. All right, y'all, we're climbing down into the end of this show. Again, I thank you for tolerating me and letting me come in and share with you guys and visit with you. I hope that I haven't done anything so bad that Phil won't invite me again. We're actually trying to make it easier for him to do that. Boomer and I are scheming on the technical side. But you're listening to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram. I'm filling in for Phil Williams. Phil's on the road, and we're about to wrap this show up and send it into the next hour. Thank you all for attending and staying with us, and thank you for letting me come in and talk to you today.
Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right.